You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
For every one person in Canada who's homeless, another 23 live in unsafe, crowded, or unaffordable housing. Up till now, researchers and decision makers have often thought of these groups, the homeless and the vulnerably housed, as two distinct populations with two different levels of need. A new study, the Health and Housing in Transition Study, paints a different picture. The study looked at longitudinal changes in the health and housing status of 1,200 homeless and vulnerably housed single adults in Vancouver, Toronto, and Ottawa. It found that both groups faced serious health consequences, and it called the situation a hidden emergency. Dr. Stephen Huang is a physician in the Center for Research on Inner City Health at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto. He leads a group called the Research Alliance for Canadian Homelessness, Housing, and Health, or REACH3, and they conducted the study. He has joined me by phone from Toronto. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, good morning.
Now, what do you mean when you use the term vulnerably housed?
In the context of our study, we were looking at people who are actually in housing but at high risk of becoming homeless. But in a broader sense, there is a much larger group of people who are vulnerably housed simply because they're spending more than 50% of their monthly income on rent each month. And we have statistics from across Canada which show that there are almost half a million Canadians in this situation. And this is what is called being in severe housing need.
And what physical health issues do people who are vulnerably housed face?
Well, I think that it's important to realize that those who are vulnerably housed include a spectrum of individuals, and some of them are in better health than others. Our study was focusing on a group of individuals who were probably among the more disabled or more likely to have health problems. And in our study, we found that their prevalence of health conditions, both physical and mental health conditions, was similar to that of people who were homeless.
Okay, and can you give me some idea of the health problems in particular?
Conditions that were very common in both people who were homeless and people who were vulnerably housed in our study were conditions such as emphysema and bronchitis, asthma, hepatitis B and hepatitis C, serious mental health problems such as depression and anxiety and bipolar disorder. So across a broad range of conditions, we see that their health is just as poor in both groups.
Now, in terms of accessing health care, what kind of issues do people who are vulnerably housed face?
People who are vulnerably housed are a bit more likely to have seen a family physician in the last year, probably because being vulnerably housed lends itself to that a bit more readily than being homeless. Having said that, the idea of having a family physician is to keep a person is that the family physician is supposed to help the person stay in good health and avoid going to the emergency room or being hospitalized. And in our study, we found that the vulnerably housed individuals were just as likely as the homeless individuals to have used an emergency room in the last year. In fact, 55% of them had used an emergency room in the last year, and about one quarter of them had been hospitalized in the last year.
You mentioned also mental health issues. Can you get into a little bit more detail? What sort of mental health issues does being vulnerably housed lead to, or can it lead to?
There's a number of interesting questions there, because actually being vulnerably housed means that one's often living in housing which is physically unsafe or unhealthy. So it might not be properly ventilated or heated, or it might be infested with bed bugs or vermin, or it might have stairways that are physically unsafe. But there are often also places where the human environment, the social environment, is really adverse, leads to depression and anxiety and probably enhances the risk of addictions or use of substances to a harmful level. So I think that the other connection is that often people who are vulnerably housed are spending so much of their income on rent, sometimes up to 2/3 of their income, that they have very little left over for the essentials of a healthy life, such as nutritious food. And in the cases of households and families, I think that often parents and mothers are being faced with painful choices about whether or not they're going to pay the rent or feed their children or buy school supplies for their children.
So oftentimes this is related to, I'm talking about the mental health issues, it's related to financial limitations, not having enough money for food or things other than rent.
The mental health impact would be both, because often the places that people who are vulnerably housed live in are just places which create a huge amount of stress and really are a place where one never feels safe or secure, and where the conditions are really so unbearable that they cause mental distress, severe mental distress. And sometimes it's because the inability to provide for the other essentials of life also cause a great deal of distress.
Now, is that security simply financially? Is it related simply to finances? In other words, are they afraid they're going to get kicked out of their room or house, or are there other issues as well?
They're both two kinds of issues. I think one is the fear and anxiety related to financial security and the fear of homelessness, but the other is actually the actual very real risk of being assaulted or attacked. And a large proportion of people, both homeless and vulnerably housed in our study, had been a victim of assault in the last year. So these are environments that are often quite unsafe, and the idea that one is only unsafe if one is homeless or in a shelter or on the street is not true. There are many places in Vancouver, for example, where people are vulnerably housed and yet at great risk, both physically and mentally.
I wonder about the age group of the people in your study. Is there a large range here?
There's quite a large range. We were only studying adults, so we didn't include youth or street youth in our study. The average person in our study was in their mid-40s. Having said that, in my experience, there's a really broad range of people living in vulnerable housing, and often it's the older individuals in their 50s and 60s who suffer the most.
I wonder if you could give me a few examples of some of the people that you studied, just so that we have some idea of what the life is actually like.
Well, I can't tell you about the people in our study, but I can tell you about people who are vulnerably housed that I've cared for as a physician, working in downtown Toronto and caring for both homeless and vulnerably housed people. There was a gentleman, a patient of mine, who was actually previously homeless, and then he moved from the shelter into what I would consider vulnerable housing. And he suffered, I think, because he was quite socially isolated once he moved out of the shelter system and was in a room, pretty much just sitting in his room day in and day out with very little human contact. And he developed symptoms, difficulty swallowing, which went unnoticed because he was not coming out and seeking care, and because he was no longer in a situation where there was someone, as there was in the shelter, to keep an eye on him and see how he was doing on a regular basis. So he actually ended up presenting with very advanced difficulty swallowing and weight loss, and it turned out that he had a cancer of his oral pharynx, of the area where one swallows. So I think that to me is a real, his case is a real stark reminder of how often people who are vulnerably housed don't have the basic necessities that are necessary for good health, and often don't have the access to health care that they need.
What kind of solutions do you see possible for people in these situations?
Well, I think that the fundamental problem is that Canada doesn't have a national housing strategy. We don't really think about housing as something that is just as important to the health of our population as clean air, fresh water, or accessible health care. And while we spend a lot of time talking about how to ensure that health care is accessible to all, we don't spend enough time thinking about how we can make decent and affordable housing accessible to Canadians, especially those who are most at risk and vulnerable. So I think that really just a basic first step would be for the federal government to recognize housing as a human right and to move forward to develop a national housing strategy.
Well, you've called this a hidden emergency. Do you see any chance that the government is going to recognize this as an emergency?
Well, I'm hopeful. I think many of your listeners may be aware that Libby Davies has pushed forward a bill, Bill C-304, which is currently before the House, and which, if voted into law, would call for a national housing strategy. So I think that that is an exciting first step. It's not the complete solution, but it is it would be a wonderful first step if that law were passed and our government were to begin the process of recognizing housing as something that's critical to the health of Canadians.
Well, thanks so much, Stephen, for talking with us today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Huang. Dr. Huang is a physician in the Center for Research on Inner City Health at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, and he leads a group called the Research Alliance for Canadian Homelessness, Housing, and Health.